For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay. So even though it's Parshas Tazria, which we'll eventually get to, I wanted to go back to Bereishis, because we're going to start with a difficult Rashi in Bereishis, and we'll see how eventually we'll get to an answer to that, I hope, from the Maharal on this week's Parsha. As you see on your sheet, we have the sixth day of creation is what's on your sheet on the Chumash side of the sheet that's in front of you. Sixth day, we have the creation of lots of things. Primarily, mankind is created at the end of the sixth day, following the creation of the birds and of the animals and the fish. All of those things at the end of the sixth day, after everything else has been created, man is created. We're not going to read through the whole thing because it's not relevant to us. Shem says, "Let us create man in our image." And he'll rule over all of these other things that have been created, the fish, and he'll rule over these birds and the animals of the world. And the Torah goes on to describe everything of that. The very end of this paragraph, the final pasuk on the page, pasuk lamed aleph, "Vayara Elokim es kol asher asav." After creating everything, creating the fish and creating the animals, creating the birds, and now he's created mankind, Hashem looks out and sees all that he has done, vihine tov me'od. And he sees that it is indeed very good. Vayihi erev, vayihi voker, yom hashishi. And it was morning, and it was evening, the sixth day. Yom hashishi. That's the end of the sixth day of creation. Now, there's a problematic phrase there, which I have underlined for you at the very end. It was morning and evening, yom hashishi. Every other day was described without that additional hey. Yom sheni, yom shlishi, yom revi, chamishi. So it should have been shishi. And here we have that extra hey. It was evening, and it was morning, and it was the sixth day. What's with the extra hey? So Rashi has what to say over here, and this is what we'll focus on for a moment. Rashi makes two comments, underlined for you on the bottom. Says Rashi, "Hosif hey bashishi bigmar maise bereishis." Number one, says Rashi, Hashem added a hey here on the sixth day, bigmar maise bereishis, at the end of the acts of creation. Lomar, to teach you, shehisne imohem, he made a tnai, a condition with creation, al menashi kablu aleim Yisrael chamisha chumshei Torah. What's the condition? I just finished creating the world, says Hashem, and I put a condition on it. What's the condition? That the Jewish people should eventually accept upon themselves the chamisha chumshei Torah, the five books of the Torah, represented by the hay. What does the hay represent? Yom hashishi. The sixth day that's contingent upon the hay in front of it, that there is a tnai, there was a condition made with creation. I've created you now, and you'll exist, provided the Jewish people accept upon themselves the Torah. So far, so good? That's as Rashi is explanation number one. Then Rashi continues, Dover Acher. He's got a second interpretation of this phrase, hashishi. Yom hashishi, says Rashi, kulam tluyim v'omdim, all of creation was hanging in the balance, so to speak, says Rashi, ad yom hashishi, until the sixth day. What is the sixth day, Rashi says? Why is it the capital T, the sixth day? Hu shishi basivan, the sixth day of Sivan. What happened on the sixth day of Sivan? Sixth day of Sivan is Shavuos, is the day that the Jewish people receive the Torah. So says Rashi, second explanation, all of creation has been completed now. It's the sixth day, Vayera Voker Yom Hashishi, and everything is waiting, it's Tluyim Va'omdim, it's hanging in the balance until when? Until the Jewish people will accept the Torah. So the Hashishi is referring to the sixth day, a different sixth day, the sixth day of the month of Nisan. So Rashi gives us two explanations. One is really based on the hay of Hashishi, the five books of Moshe. The other one is based on the sixth day, not just the sixth day of creation, but the sixth day of the month of Sivan. What's the meaning of both interpretations that Rashi gives us? That in some way and somehow, that the creation is somehow contingent upon, on some level, the Jewish people receiving the Torah. So far, so good? Rav Harman asks a question. Rav Harman, who wrote the footnotes in the bottom of the Maharal that we use often, asks a question. It's not my question, it's his question. These are really basically the same. What's the difference between the two drushes that Rashi gives us? both drushas have the same idea of, now that we've finished creating the world, it's contingent upon the Jewish people accepting the Torah. One drasha, he quotes it from the Hay of Hashishi, the five books of Moshe, is from the sixth day of Sivan, the day they received the Torah. But they're really the same thing. Why does he give us two drushas, two explanations, that are in essence really the same? That's his question. Like the question? Don't like the question?
Yes, that's a drasha. She's really pretty.
Pretty simple, pretty concise, and here he's gone out of his way to give us a different pshat. He says, Dover Acher, but in essence, seems to be just about the same. So Rav Hamer is going to give an answer. He's going to give an answer based on the Marah that we'll see from this week's Parsha, which I think is a very brilliant insight. Then we'll go back to this Rashi in a second. So let's take a look at Parsha's Tazria. Okay, Parsha's Tazria begins this week's Parsha with a woman who has a child, and she becomes Tameh if she has a boy for 7 days, if she has a girl for 14 days, what's known as Tumas Leda. Simply the process of giving birth to a child creates a level of Tumah, and then there's a purification process, she brings a Korban. All of those laws are discussed here in the beginning of the Parsha. What was the end of last week's Parsha? An unfair question to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. What happened at the end of last week's Parsha? I'm sure you're all in shul during laning, and you remember. So at the end of last week's parsha was the halachas of kashrus, the birds and the animals and the fish that you can eat and that you can't eat. That's the end of Parsha Shmini, which means that after Shmini begins with the eighth day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, so we've completed all of the parshas of the Mishkan, beginning in Sefer Shmos, the end of Sefer Shmos, of last Sefer, all the parshas describing how to build it, what it'll look like, and in the beginning of Vayikra, what types of karbanos you bring and how you bring it, and now we get into some details of some laws and we go through kashrus. You go through the types of birds you can eat, and the fish, and the signs. And then we get to human law, in the beginning of our parsha, of a woman who has a baby, the laws of Tumah and Tahara. We get into Bris Milah, all sorts of different laws, Taraf, are going to come in, that come in here. So Rashi quotes from Chazal Rabbi Simloi, who's bothered by the order. If you were writing the Torah, and you had just completed what you wanted to talk about the Mishkan and Karbanos, and now you wanted to start addressing laws, and you had three laws in front of you to talk about. You needed to talk about kashrus of animals, kashrus of birds, and kashrus of and fish, and kashrus of and the laws of mankind. Which would you start with?
Mankind.
Why?
Most important.
Correct. And there are numerous instances in which you would start with that which is considered the ikkar, that which is considered more primary. The purpose of creation would be mankind. So Simlai is bothered. It's like interesting, he says, that here when we finish with the laws of the Mishkan, we begin teaching laws. We have three laws to teach in quick succession. We have a parsha break in the middle. So it's something like, well, last week, this week. But if you're reading it straight through, you would go straight from the laws of kashrus of animals and the birds. And you'd go straight into a man's law, the laws of having a child, and Tumah, and Tahara. Why don't you start with mankind? If you have to teach the three anyway, just switch the order. So Rabbi Simloi answers as follows. So Amar Rabbi Simloi, says Rashi, Kishem shi yitzi rosto shel odom achar kol behem l'chayev ha'of b'maisev bereishis. We already saw this order once, in the same way that when it came to the 6 days of creation, what was the order we did there? We also started with the animals and the fish and the birds, and then we created mankind. Says Rabbi Simloi, just like Kishem, in the creation of mankind, we started with the animal kingdom and then went to mankind. Kach Torasso, so to the laws that dictate how to treat and relate to animals, fish, birds, and mankind. Nisparsha Achar Toras Behem Machayevov is also explained after animals, fish, and birds. I keep throwing in fish, but it's mentioned being that Rashi doesn't mention it. So says Rabbi Simloi, well, we did this before. Just like we did that in Maaseh Bereishis, so too do we do that here. You like that answer? Not really. I can tell. Why not?
Only because there's so many other animal-related laws. Like, the laws of kashrus are really human laws. Like, they're people laws.
Okay.
Like, they're not so much about what you're allowed to plow with together. Like, those are almost more animal-related laws.
Okay, I agree with you. Because we're going to be addressing this at length, they're human laws how to relate to the animals.
Yeah.
You know, the Torah of the animals. In other words, the Torah's not telling you how much times to feed them a day and how much water they need. This is how the human race relates to the animal kingdom. That's what's being explained to us, what you can eat and what you can't eat and how you work. And I know. So says Rav Simlai, because they were created first and we were created last, so when we explain their laws, we explain theirs first and ours last. That's what Rashi quotes. If you're not comfortable with that, neither is the Maharal. Moses says, I don't understand that. I understand that, he asks. Why was man created last? Is there a reason for that back in on the 6 days of creation? Says the Maharal, and start with the Afalgav that's underlined. Says the Maharal, Afalgav de Gabi Bria, when it comes to the creation, Mefarish b'Gemara b'Perek Echazin, was explained to the Gemara in the Masechta Sanhedrin, reasons why man is created. There are actually three reasons given why man is created last. The Gemara presents, the Gemara asks this question, why should man be created last? Shouldn't man be created first? Any suggestions? Why do you think the Gemara says, why should man be created last?
Like the build-up to man.
So one answer the Gemara gives, which is very similar to that, is that since man is the purpose and the climax, so it should be that when he's created, the world is ready. That he's ushered straight into Shabbos, and the world is ready for him. If you invited a special guest to your home for a meal, so you wouldn't have him come at 4 o'clock and then say, okay, we're going to set the table, I'm just going to finish dinner, why don't you just wait in the playroom for a little bit until I'm ready for you? And you have a chashuv of a guest, so you invite him and everything is ready, that when he comes, you usher him straight into the dining room table and you say, we're so glad you're here to join us, let's begin. Or if you want to social, whatever, but it's ready. You're ready to address him. So the first answer the Gemara gives is, mankind, which is the purpose of creation, the ability to fulfill God's will in this earth, so everything was created before him that he should be able to do so. So the second Gemara, another reason. What would have been had mankind been created before some of the animals? So then the history that would come down would be, man would say, you know, I did that, right? You know that I was involved in the creation of the animals. Either as a partner with God, God asked me what I thought, should we make, you know, 5-legged animals or 4-legged animals? I was the one who suggested the 4-legged animals. So says Gemara that there should never be anyone who say that God had a partner in creation. Man was created at the end, everything was done, I did it on my own, and then after that, you came along. Gemara suggests such a reason as well, that there shouldn't be any heretics who can make such a suggestion. Gemara gives a third answer, which is the one that Maharal quotes over here, which is, it says the Gemara, "Im yisgoe adam." If man should ever feel haughty, he should ever feel too great, too big for himself, and how wonderful he is, omrim lo, we could say to him, afilu yitush kadamecha. Even the lowly gnats and the worms and the rats, they were all created before you, buddy. Don't think of yourself as so great. You are at the end of the line. So that within the Gemara you have reasons of the greatness of man, that you're created last, that you should be ushered right into the Shabbos. You have, don't think of yourself as so great. Things, even the lowly gnats and the rats and the worms, they were all created before you. Divish feels that Nivra al-Damachron, the Maitre Bracious, Odiyesh Talmim Achayim. So the Gemara has lots of reasons. So why is this significant? So again, so if you're in Maitre Bracious, you're talking about the first 5-6 days of creation. Why is man created last? Is it random? It's not random. There are reasons, a bunch of reasons the Gemara gives, as humility, that he should be ushered in, that he shouldn't think that he's a partner, whatever the reasons are. There are reasons that Chazal see why man should be created last. Okay, so now you fast forward a couple thousand years. We're teaching the laws of the Torah, and I have to teach the laws of the fish and the animals and the birds and mankind, Tum and Tara, Kashrus. What order should I teach them in? So what did Rashi quote from Rebbe Simlai? Well, just like you taught man last there, so you have to teach him last here. Well, do any of those reasons apply here when it comes to just teaching the laws? That just because man had to be created last for any of the reasons that we gave, does that impact how you and when order you teach their laws? That's an option. Who cares? Why should it be? Im kain kasha, he writes, kevan de otsan ta'amim lo shayachim. Since the reasons that were given then at the 6 days of creation don't apply now, im kain b'torasan, when it comes to teaching their laws and how to address and to deal and relate to them, lama makdim behem machayiv of the teras ha'adam. And he says, don't tell me that just because we did it once, we did it a second time. Maybe you'll say that. Well, since we started that way, we should just finish that way. He says, the language of the Gemara is not kavan. It doesn't say, since we taught their laws first, and my Sibrashis, we're just going to continue. It says, just like Kishem, in the same way that we taught mankind last then, we're going to teach mankind last over here as well. Says what I don't understand. That's his question. So far, so good? His answer is as follows. It's a very, it's a complex answer, but he says it fairly simply, as he wants to do, and we'll see if we can understand it. Says what as follows. Yesh lomar. Degam torosan, the laws, the way that we relate to the animals and to humankind, eich yihiyu mitnahagim, how we treat them and deal with them, hu dover doma libriya, something which is considered analogous, it's similar to the creation itself. Kimosha bria hu tikunam. Just like when I created them, that was their tikun, that was, I don't know how to literally translate that, they're being fixed, they're coming into existence, they're being created. Hachinami torosam, now that you teach me how to relate to them, hi tikun havayosam. That is the tikun of their existence. In my weak understanding of this and trying to explain it, a child is born. A child is born, you're now holding an infant child. So you say, I just, together, God, myself, my husband, I parted, I created a child. Child is here. It's in existence. It's here in the world. Are you done? Right? No, not at all. I mean, you could say it. No, like, not at all. You just created a child. No. Well, there's creating the child. But I want things for this child. I want the child to grow and to develop and to be healthy and then to be a mensch and to be independent and to be refined and to be educated. I want all sorts of things that when I look 25 years later and I see this child, I say, that's what I dreamed of when I had this child. The child's now been born, created, but the fulfillment of all those dreams has just begun. Now I need to teach, instruct, inculcate with values and ideals and morals to actually get the child to where I want it to be. Says the Maharal, Hashem created the world. Now the world's here. It exists. People, animals, fish, birds. But not finished. What should that world look like? How should it develop? How should it relate to each other? How should human beings relate to animals? How should human beings relate to human beings? How should human beings relate to me? So we're just getting started. So I created it. It exists. What then is going to take it to the place that I want it to be? Those are the Torahs, the laws that the Torah gives us as to how to behave, how to relate. That's analogous, and my analogy is, of course, not perfect. Analogous to a parent now saying to the child, no, we don't use our hands for hitting. Child thought you did. That's right, child on his own, little three-year-old mind thinks that's what you do. And then the parent comes in and says, no, that's not what hands are for. Hands are for eating or making nice, not for hitting. Words are to be used like this and not like that. One could easily look at that as a continuation of the creative process. The creative process, the creation of the child began with its conception and then its birth, but we're continuously creating, so to speak, in teaching, developing, showing how the child should then develop to become, if we could borrow a modern psychological term, a fully self-actualized human being. But we just call him a mensch. We don't have to use any fancy psychological terms for that. Says the Maharal, I'm just reading that line that we read again. The gam torosan eich yihyu mitnahagim hu dover dome libriya. When I teach how to relate to the elements of the world, is something similar to creation. Kimosha habriya hu tikunim, in the same way that the briya is, the actual creation is its tikun, is it coming into existence, is it being created, it's fixing itself, so to speak. Hachinami torosim utikun havayotim. It's Torah, its laws, teaches you how it should be. Lekach, kishem shemakdim vibriya chayev ofo. So therefore, in the same way, in the fifth and sixth days of creation, the Torah starts with the birds and the fish and the animals, and then does mankind, for lots of reasons. But there's a reason why it's done that way. We started with fish, animals, birds, and then we did mankind. Hachanami b'torasan, so too in the laws which dictate how we relate to those creatures. De'ein ha-Torah ela gemar tikunam. The laws that we're teaching now are only the completion of their fruition. They're coming into existence. They're being what they can be. So if you ask, why did we teach the laws of Kashrus here in Parsha Shemini and Tazria, thousands of years after the creation of mankind? Why do we teach their laws in the same order? Says the Rav, because you're doing the same thing. You're finishing the process that you began in the fifth and sixth days of creation. You create fish and birds and animals. And then you create mankind. Now when you teach them how to behave, when you teach them how mankind should relate to the animals and fish and birds and themselves, that's the completion, the gemar tikunim of the process that was begun. Mankind wouldn't reach his self-actualization, if you will, his perfection, unless he has the laws of the Torah to tell him how to behave. How is he supposed to do? What animals can eat? What animals can't eat? When does he become tamei? When does he become tamei? All the laws are the completion. So what do you teach first? Animals, because that's how they were created. There was a reason for it then, and that reason, we're just finishing that process. So far, so good. Moral brings a proof to this. Moral brings a proof, which we've seen in the Rashi. Says Rashi, b'shvil kach, because of this concept, Amru, Chazal say, Hosef Hey Bashishi, that the Torah adds the letter Hey when it discusses the sixth day of creation. Vayera Vayivoker Yom HaShishi. Listen to the words of the Maral. Lomar Shekol Maase Bereishis Hayutuyim VeOmdim Ad Shishi V'Sivan. To say, what's the Hey doing there? That the entire acts of creation were hanging in the balance, Tuyim VeOmdim, until the sixth day of Sivan. What happens on the sixth day of Sivan? Jewish people are given the Torah. They receive it. They accept it. He fills in the rest of the Medrash, which Rashi didn't quote the whole thing in full. Im yikablu yisrael ha-Torah mutav. If the Jewish people on the sixth of Sivan accept the Torah, great. V'im lav yachzru l'tohu v'vo. Now, on the sixth day, I finished creating you, and it's tluyim v'vo, it's hanging in the balance. You'll go back to tohu v'vo, to complete void nothingness, unless they accept the Torah. V'zehu mipnei she'ein gemar briyoson rak al yedei ha-Torah. And that is because the completion of their creation is only through the Torah, she'imisakein ha'olam, which fixes the world. V'hu ikar tikuno. So the world exists, but it doesn't know how to act. It doesn't know how to behave. It doesn't know how to develop without the Torah. So it's all tzluyim v'omdim. It's hanging in the balance until we receive our instructions, what we're supposed to do with it. Okay? Which drasha did the Maral quote? When we learned the Rashi, there were two chazals that Rashi quoted on that pasuk on Yom HaShishi. Which one does the Maral quote? The first or the second? And second. There are two Rashis. They seem to be very similar. The first Rashi said, what's the extra hay? Hashishi, the five books of Moshe. Rashi said, after the completion of creation, there was a Tanai, there was a condition placed that you'll only exist as long as the Jewish people accept the Torah. Then Rashi says the second thing, and he says, they're all tfluyim v'omdim, they're all hanging in the balance until the sixth day of Sivan we'd accept the Torah. They seem very similar. Same basic idea. Everything is based on Jewish people accepting the Torah. Here the Maral just says this beautiful thought on the reason why the laws of mankind is taught after the animals. And he brings a proof to it from the extra hay, Hashishi, which teaches us the Joshua. And he chooses one of the two. The first or the second, he chooses the second. So I ask you, random or on purpose? Does it make a difference or does it not make a difference? So you can say random, but we're going to choose not to. What's the difference between the two Joshuas? What other words, what other points would you pick up different in the two Rashis? Something very, very significant. Says Rashi. Let me read them again, and I'll translate them literally, and listen for the difference. Says Rashi number one. Drasha number one. Hostif hei bashishi. The Torah adds a hey. Bigmar maisa bereshis. At the completion of the acts of creation, at the end of the creating of the world, Lomar, to teach you, Shehitna imahim, he made a tnai, he made a condition with the world, Al Minas Sheikablu Aleim Yisrael Chamisha Chum Shetar, that the Jewish people accept upon themselves the five books of the Torah. That's Rashi number one. Rashi number two, Dover Acher Yom Hashishi, Kulam Tluyim Ve'omdim, they are all standing and hanging until the sixth day of creation, the sixth day of Sivan, which is the day the Jewish people receive the Torah. What's the difference between these two Rashis?
The first one doesn't really matter what day it would happen.
Doesn't matter. That's
whenever.
That's correct. This is how Rav Harman explains this. This is beautiful. Listen to these words. The first Rashi: Bashishi bigumar ma'aseh bereishis. At the completion of the acts of creation, there was a condition put upon it. That means to say, creation's complete. 6 days are here. There's a condition upon it. Meaning, like any time I make a deal, the deal is done, but it's conditional upon something. Whatever is here is here. The only thing that hangs in the balance is, will it stand? Because if the condition is not fulfilled, it will nullify what's done. If the condition is fulfilled, then we accept what's done. But what's done is done. This is, I'll sell you my house on condition that I get a job in New York. So the sale is done, the house, all the terms are done, everything is complete. What are we waiting on? There's a condition placed upon the sale. If I get a job in New York, and I say by whatever day it is, then everything goes through, and if not, it falls apart. Is there any change to the terms of the sale? There's no change. There's just a condition placed upon it, which we have to wait to see if we can play itself out. That's his Rashi, his drasha number one. And then Rashi brings you a dover acher, brings you a second drasha. Says Rashi, listen to his words. Yom Hashishi, kulam tluyim ve'omdim ad yom Hashishi. Everything is hanging and is being determined, is still hanging in the balance, literally, until the sixth day. The sixth day of Sivan, when the Jewish people accept the Torah. So suggests Rav Hartman, that second thing that Rashi says is fundamentally different. It's not that there was a Gemar Maitzah Bereishis, there was a completion of creation, and now we're just waiting to see if the condition will be fulfilled at Har Sinai. It's Kulam Tlu. There's no words of Gemar Maitzah Bereishis in the second quote. It's not that the creation has been done. It's all waiting and hanging in the balance to see if the Jewish people accept the Torah. Why? Because on the 6th of Sivan, the process is complete. It's not done yet. It's actually Tuyin V'omdin. It is hanging and waiting to see what's going to be. These are fundamentally different approaches in Rashi. The first approach, which Rashi is quoting them both from Chazal, says, Ma'aseh Bereishis was done, the world is complete, but it only has purpose if the Jewish people have the Torah and they accept it, and they observe its laws. Otherwise, there's no purpose for the world. What do I need a world for if the Jews don't have the Torah? So I created a world, and the world is here, and it's only here on condition that the Jewish people have the Torah. That's the first approach. There's a second approach that Rashi says, that says, it's not complete yet until the Jewish people get the instruction manual to know how to manage this world, how to relate to the world, how to address the world. That will complete the creation process. Says the Maral, when Reb Simloy, the Tana, sees in our parsha that the Torah went in order of teaching the laws, it went from animals to fish to birds, and then it gets to humankind. And Rabbi Simloy says, that's exactly what happened in the beginning of creation. And in the same way that we did it there, we're going to do it here, because what we're doing here is completing the process. Which approach is the Maral saying Rabbi Simloy holding like? Holding like that second approach that says the process isn't done. It's a continuational process that's working towards the completion of the world. So when the Maral quotes, the reason why we're taught the rules and the laws in the same order is because this is the completion of the process, he says, and that's what Chazal meant when they said, Kulam Tluyin Va'omdin. That's the second language that Rashi quote. Everything is hanging in the balance because it's not actually done until the Jewish people receive the Torah. When they receive the Torah and they know how to relate to the world, then the process is complete in terms of what it was that the goal of all of creation was in the first place. And in such, says the Rav Hartman, Maral is explaining to us how he understands the two approaches in the Rashi, that he quotes specifically only the second, because it's only the second approach that holds that the laws of the Torah are actually completing creation, not simply the terms upon which I'll have a world that exists. But that there are actually two approaches that Rashi quotes, and Rabbi Simloi here in Parshas Tazria is working within the second approach, and therefore in the same way that we taught the order last when it came to Maaseh Bereishis, we teach the order last here because we're literally completing that same process. Lefikach, the last line of the Maral, if the Jewish people would not receive the Torah, Yachzor L'Tohu V'Avoh, the world would return to its complete and utter voidness. She'ein kan tikun, there is no tikun. Lefikach Hakol Shem Brihu, everything is creation. It's all a continuation of the creation process, and that this Rashi is holding like that second approach over there, that the world is in continuous development. It's the growth of the world in the same way as a child continues to develop and continues to grow, mature, become more sophisticated and refined. That's the process that's taking place as the Jewish people receive the Torah and teach its principles, so to speak, as an Or LaGoyim, as a light to the nation, to the world. It's the refinement, the development, the sophistication. It's the continuation process of creation. A parent wouldn't say, I'm done, the child exists, I'm finished. I'm finished when the child becomes reaches its full potential, and the child has self-actualized, become a mensch, and everything that we earn for it, so too the laws of the Torah do that for us, and that's why we have the order exactly as the way that it is over here. That, says Rav Hartman, is what he sees in this particular Maral as an explanation for the two Rashis that we had in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis.
Is it ever really done, or, I mean...
So that process was when we received it. In other words, the way the Maral is saying, like...
Received, then it's done.
But even though we now need to actually do it. That was... Yeah, and the way that I expressed it, it would be still sort of like, no, now we have it.
Now we're doing it.
But we got to actually do it in terms of actually bringing the world. And that's where the world will end up. Eventually, it will end up... L'sakein olam b'malchus shakai. The world will be that perfected place where humankind reaches that state of perfection that it can through the laws that the Torah gives us, which is the instruction manual as to how the human being should actually act. And that's what he sees. Those are the two approaches he sees in Chazal, and that's what, and for this Parshas Tazria is going with that. All right. Geschmack. Okay. So we started talking about brachos and leaving the place where you are. So let's continue that discussion a little bit. I don't have actual sheets, but we'll just talk about it for a second. So I mentioned that the discussion that we were having about leaving Starbucks, leaving Menchie's, leaving your home, is primarily a discussion of shahakol, ha'adama, ha'etz type products. Your drinks, your ice cream, your fruits, all of those types of products. What about cakes and breads and the like? So that's a different story, and it basically says, goes as follows. It's based on the following halacha. When you finish a cake meal, you have to make an ala mechia. If you leave the place where you were eating, then you're done, you're finished, you had enough cake, you don't want to have any more, and you leave. You're in your car, you head off to your office, you realize, oh, I forgot to make an ala mechia. The halacha is, as much as you'd like to do it right where you are on the spot, and just say, well, I'm here right now, I remember, you're actually required to go back to the place that you ate, and make the ala mechia where you were. The nature of the more significant bracha, the hamotzi and an ala mechia, requires you to return to the place where you are and make the ala mechia there. If you remember, you didn't make a brei nefashos on the ice cream you had, no problem, you can make it in your car, in your office, wherever you are. But on a cake, noodle, a bread meal, you need to go back to where you ate and make the bracha there. That's the halacha. We're not discussing the halacha tonight, we're just taking that as a given right now because that's the halacha. What that does is as follows. Whereas when I was eating ice cream and I got up from the table and I walked out of my house, the halacha recognizes that your meal is over because you got up and left. So you just ended your meal. There are several ways to end a meal. You can actually make a borei nefasho, so that ends your meal. I just ended it. I could verbally state, I'm done, or you can leave. All of those basically have the same impact of saying, in my mind, I've ended my meal. When I leave, if again, I had cake or a bread, so I can end my meal by saying, I bench, that ends my meal. Or I can end my meal by saying, I'm done, I'm going to bench. Or I could end my meal, but what if I leave? So that form doesn't end your meal. because you're required to come back. You can't say by definition having left is the end of the meal, because you still need to come back and finish up. You're not finished unless you verbally say I'm done. But just leaving alone doesn't by definition end the meal, since you're still required to come back to make the bracha achron in the place in which you ate. So therefore, when it comes to bread or cake products, simply leaving the house, going to daven mincha, going to take a walk, going to check the mail, all the things which may have ended a meal if you were just eating ice cream or having a drink of coffee or having a fruit, but leaving alone does not end the meal because you're still required to come back and finish the meal and make the bracha there. That's the basic principle. This would apply to bread. It would apply to cakes. The requirement, of course, then becomes, since the only reason why you're not considered as having ended your meal when you're left is your requirement to come back, and your requirement to come back is because that's where you have to make your al hamichya or your benching, this would only be true if you ate enough in the first place to require an al hamichya or benching. So that if you just, you know, you washed, you know, you took a quick nibble, and you didn't have enough to bench, you didn't have anything close enough to bench, you had a bite of cake, and then you leave. Let's take the classic we were talking about, right, drinking your coffee in your home last time. So let's say you drink a coffee and you have a muffin. So you're getting things ready, you make a mizonah, so you take a bite of your muffin, and you take a drink of your coffee, but you're not out the door yet. You're still finishing up and doing your things. And then you get to your car, and you get to your office, and now you have your muffin which has been nibbled on, and your 3/4 cup of coffee, to say, I'll definitely make another bracha. So from yesterday, last week's discussion on the coffee, the answer would be, for sure. Because you started it where you were. You weren't literally out the door. You were having your coffee while you were getting ready. Well, what about my muffin? They say, we mentioned that muffins are different. So they say, muffins are different because you have the obligation to return for a bracha achrona. If you just took a single bite out of your muffin, and then you never ate enough to make an al nichi in the first place, because you were running around and it took too long and you never finished it, so then the same rules that would apply to your coffee would actually apply to your muffin, because the only reason why muffins is different is because you have an obligation to return to make an al nichi. You don't have an obligation to make an al nichi. You didn't eat enough. So then the cake or bread product would fall into the regular category, and your bracha would be considered ended when you left, and you make a new one in your office or in your car or wherever life takes you. As far as that goes, your other option when it comes to mezonos, however, is assuming you did eat enough to make the, you have to go back. Your other option is, since your meal is not over, because you have to go back, you have another option, which is just to continue where you are, because it all ties in. Let's say I did have enough. I ate the whole muffin, and then I forgot to make another and I left. So I just get to my office, and I say, I forgot to make an amnichah, so I have to go back, right? Why do I have to go back? Because my bracha is not finished, because my meal's not over, because I'm still tied to my place. Well, since my bracha is not finished, I can keep eating. Because the same rule which makes me have to go back, that says, your meal didn't end, you're not done, also says, I'm not done. And even if I didn't have a retention originally, as long as I eat another kezayis worth where I am, then I can make my halal michya there and continue that same bracha. And this was done all the time on Shabbos lunch. You know, you start your meal one place. In this community, I have not seen it done. In Brooklyn, my grandparents, the Europeans, would do this all the time. They would, you know, eat their meal at home, and then they would have dessert with someone else. My grandmother, she should live and be well. Like the idea of not eating at your own table was just like heretical. Not to eat at your own table? But they also wanted to socialize, so they did it for dessert. In my grandmother's way, at least, make all of the Europeans that way, that you'd go over for coffee and cake after the meal. But the meal, it's your own table. You have to be, you know, the balabasta we have on the table, and the husband at the head of the table, and they would eat. They wouldn't bench at home. And they would go, and then they would not make any new brachas where they were, and then they would bench there together with whoever they were with.
I don't know if this is only for washing, I'm looking mistaken. Are you mechachilos to keep in mind that you're changing location if it's something like a mezonos or bread?
You don't have to.
Okay.
How long do you have?
So you generally have, that's going to be a whole nother time. You generally have, the basic rule is about 72 minutes. The general assumption is from the time you finish eating, 72 minutes until that meal has ended. It's ended because of time. In other words, there are various ways of ending. Now, you can't make a bracha achron anymore. That meal is over and done. Unless you mentally ended it, that's generally the amount of time that we will give you comes, the 72 minutes is a common factor, comes from the 4 mil, which was a measure of distance that was used in the Gemara. Like, that's the amount of time it takes the food to digest, the Gemara assumed. So when the food that you've eaten is digested and you haven't eaten anything more and you haven't eaten rochel, like, you're done. That meal is now over. It's not over because you mentally ended it. It's not over because you left. It's not over because you stated it's over. It's over because the food's gone. The food that you were eating has moved on in the system, and therefore you can't say that this is part of that eating. That eating has moved along, so to speak.
You eat half a muffin at home. You drive to work. You realize you never made a bracha achrona.
Mm-hmm.
Every hour, you should.
If you wanted to keep that bracha going,
bracha,
yeah, that's what I say. I mean, like, I make a bracha when I get to the office at 9 o'clock, and I, you know, try to remember to make a bracha run at 5 o'clock on the way out because it's just a continuous grazing the whole way through.
And then you drive home, you can finally make.
Technically speaking, if you were careful to eat it within the hour, but you have to have eaten a kazayas in the beginning.
Right.
Otherwise, when you left, that would end it right there. You have to get the process started.
The majority of your bracha.
Yeah, so if you do that, then that would continue unless you've ever had mentally ended it at some point, or you went more than an hour. And that's what happens. And actually, I forgot. I thought it was going to continue kneeling. Then you actually get involved in a meeting, in a conversation. You do something, and then before you know it, it's lost, and you never made the bracha. Yeah.
Can we just apply this? I'm just thinking of a lemaisa situation. So let's say you're at Broadway. I'm just making sure I'm understanding everything you're saying. And you are getting a sandwich, and you wash there at Broadway, and then you plan on going in your car. So does that mean what can you tell us what the proper stages would be for that?
Are you eating at Broadway, or you're just washing it because you're planning on leaving?
Washing it because you're going to eat it in your car.
Right. So that's really the case. That way you don't even need to wash. That's the same thing with the drink. That's the case that we discussed last week of the traveler. And it's really, you're not spending yourself to eat in Broadway. You just need a place to wash. You're eating in your car. So your place is your car.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a place. If you had sat for a meeting at Broadway, and it was a quick meeting, or you didn't have a chance to eat because you were so busy talking, and then you went to your car, then we would say, what type of food did you have? If you sat and had washed or had a mezonos, then you can continue just taking it in your car with you.
Oh, I see, but you don't need to actually make the bracha on Broadway, so there's like less of a hefsek, you know what I mean?
That's a separate issue. Now you're talking about a hefsek issue. Where should I make my...
Yeah.
That would apply in your house and your sukkah. That's a separate discussion of where's the best place to make a bracha and how much time do I have between making my bracha and when I should make my hamotzi and actually eat, which is always supposed to be as close to as possible. But that's not related to the ending of a bracha because you left.
Oh, right. Sorry, I was asking more like starting it, but that's right. You're right.
Correct. We'll hopefully get to all that.
And the 72 minutes starts from when you finish.
You finish the last bite. No, your last bite.
So you could take like a tiny bite an hour later.
Yeah, I believe that's okay. I've been doing that, so I'm hoping that that's correct. That's been my assumption. That, in other words, that your meal is now continued because you're continuing to eat.
I feel like that's not really the point.
I agree, but it's I think I've always Lena will check into this. This has been what I've always done, but it's just I don't want to call it a legal loophole, but that's what it is. In other words, every time I eat, that's when there's a natural time. And again, a bracha ends in it has to end because you ended it. So there are various ways in which the bracha has been ended. One is you made a bracha achrona, definitive end. I declare I'm done. I can leave. Or I could just wait too long. So within that waiting too long, that's just the way that it is. Just as long as I don't wait too long, I haven't ended it. Is it a loophole? A little bit, but I still think it works.
The loopholes on everything in general just always don't sit well with me.
Right, but
I mean, they're fine with me. I do them anyway. I do that also, but they always just feel like a little off.
I think you're right, but that's how like any system. In other words, Chazal, they weren't able to say, okay, if you have a real meal and you sit down, then you have 70 minutes. But if you just nibble, it's just right. It just was like this is how. That's how I believe it was said. I will be near the check into that. I've always done it that way, and so I certainly hope that I'm correct in that. Very many times in life, when I'm doing things, I'm working on the assumption that if I'm doing it this way, I once looked into it or heard that this is the right way to do it, and I'm working on that assumption. Every once in a while, most of the time, that's right. That's why Masora is so strong. Like, I don't know what it says in the book. This is what my mother did. This is what her mother did. This is what her mother did. Because if after they're doing it, somebody must have said at some point, this is the way to do it, and then we just continue it. And every once in a while, it's not right. And it turns out that somebody did something wrong along the way, and then that just worked its way into the system. But that's what's difficult. And we live in a generation in which there's been that huge break between the Masora of the European world, and now we're book smart, in which we look things up. and it doesn't always match what it says in the book to what, you know, Bubby did. And there have been many people who write about that concept, but generally it works out fairly well that, you know, the things that we do are because you remember hearing the seminary wants to do this, but I don't remember why I'm doing this, I just know that I'm doing it, and it's, you know, rooted in something, but not always. I'll check into that for sure. All right.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.